Greetings. Just to start us off, my name's Marianne Nicholson, and I'm here today in conversation with Jerry Ambers and Seneca Ambers. And we're participating in this discussion as a part of the exhibition Woven In, which was held at the Art Gallery of Greater Victoria in 2023. And Woven In was meant to bring together a conversation with artists and thinkers in generative dialogue to identify and name generations of colonization, historically and ongoing, that have suppressed the voices of Indigenous women. Woven In considered the advocacy of Indigenous women in relationship to forms of media, and it looked at it from a historical vantage point up to today and considered the context within which that advocation was happening and what the influence of that is in the contemporary generation. So Woven In dialogues unravel neocolonial strategies that exploit, co-opt, and commodify Indigenous cultures, ceremonies, and rituals that are sacred spiritual practices by gathering collective voices through community connections with Indigenous nations and family. Urban Indigenous being represented in cities, how is culture and sacredness protected? The diaspora creates separation from the grounding of their home communities. Ceremony and art are colliding. How do we chart new ways with these realities? Finding anecdotes to strengthen and build community, remembering histories of the undersung, of those that are held by the land, unlocking the keys of collective power, with conversations and collective remembering, Woven In holds space for long threads of interconnectivity. I guess that's the framework that we wanted to have this conversation. It's somewhat intergenerational because Jerry is the mother of Seneca, and we're able to look at a long expanse through Jerry's experiences of advocacy for Indigenous issues over a number of generations going back to the late 60s. So I just wanted to allow Jerry and Seneca to introduce themselves. Just to, again, reiterate my own position, I'm an artist and culturally engaged person of the Muskumaq Tsawedenoch. I'm very invested in the collective power of our being, and I'm also very much invested in the power of our women's voices and place, which historically was very, very strong. So strong that colonial observation mentions that our Indigenous women were considered too strong and that they needed to shut that down in order to have more effective power over their negotiations with Indigenous peoples and their takeover of our lands. So this is part of a process of raising women's voices, bringing that back into a place where we can be heard. And it starts with conversation where we share experiences and thoughts together. So thank you for being here.
My name is Jerry Ambers, and I grew up in Alert Bay, and so I grew up as Namris, and this has been a long, long journey that our Kwakwaka'wakw people have been on regarding our territories, our lands. And my own journey began with being part of the Native Alliance for Red Power in 1967. And the reason we formed the Native Alliance for Red Power was because a young woman from Williams Lake was tortured and murdered and thrown in the garbage dump. And the three men that murdered her, two of them were acquitted and one was given a $200 fine. And in the same province newspaper, a man was hunting moose out of season and was given a $200 fine. And so we thought, if this is all our lives are worth as Indigenous women, we have to do something about this. And so a small group of us formed the Native Alliance for Red Power, and our first demonstration was against residential school. And I've watched all these decades the process of colonization in our own territories. And I've watched our, you know, leaders and elders be united in their work. All of the villages in our territories, when the government was moving against us, they had a unified voice. And so it wouldn't be uncommon for all the leaders to fly to Ottawa together to protest. This was our strength. And now, today, because the government won't acknowledge anyone but village to village in our territories. So I see everyone in their own little communities fighting to deal with ongoing encroachment of on our lands. And so when we're by ourselves or we're individual, we are far weaker than if we are working together. And this is how I mark the progression of colonization. And it's also along with the removal of children from their communities, the removal of our land, the trauma, the abuse has led to a lot of individualism. And I've just learned through some research how trauma actually leads to narcissism. So there's been a large rise, not just in Indigenous communities, but in society in general. So the ability to be a community, to think communally, is, you know, this ability is slipping away in our communities. And so it's causing, so, you know, narcissism and abuse, and predatory abuse in particular, are the two hardest things to heal in communities. And so these are the two issues that are rising in our own communities. So I just wanted to give that brief sort of overview of, you know, some of the conversations that we're going to be having. Okay, thank you.
Hi, Seneca Ambers. I am Mumpthagila, Mithlawitsis, and Numgis, a little bit of everywhere from our Kwakwaka'wakw territories. But I believe at this time I identify as Mumpthagila because that is where my father is from. That is where my Ambers family is from. Yeah, I watched my mom, over the years and listen to her stories, and then now I have my own stories to tell, because the same issues continue to invade our peoples. And I think the awareness of what is happening is lower than it should be, and that is also due to the individualistic sort of mentality that's sort of, I would say, plaguing our people, because that is not the way of our people. You know, we support one another. We're connected in ways that, like, I just think about how, you know, growing up, how, you know, the old people would, like, in our community, knew who I was and knew who my parents were and knew who my family was. And they would tell me and they would say, this is how we're related. This is how we're connected. And I think that when I look at how I am with the next generations, I can't do that. And that says a lot to me about how disconnected we are as a people. So that creates, I believe, that creates that perfect situation for colonized mindset to reach out to people who haven't maintained that collectivistic mindset and exploit our people. And they've done it very well. And I say this because we're experiencing that right now with our Mumpthagila people. We've lost all of our, you know, on paper, because I say this is like the land still belongs to us. The places are still under our title and will always be. But according to the government, we don't have a say in it because we are not, because the band structures that they've created now have eliminated us from having a seat at the table to discuss our own territories. So right now we have no say over what happens in our own territories. And that's directly related to that individualized thinking and this is for us, not for everyone, right? So we're in a fight right now to, you know, try and regain access and have something to give to our children and our grandchildren. And we're recognized in our own big house system, but not in the colonial system. So it's an odd place to be. And, you know, we're just, I think, there's a lot to that. There's a lot of layers. And I think that's, we'll be talking about a lot of those kind of situations. And they're all unique and different, but they all come down to the same ideas of individual versus collective. Because if we did things collectively, we would take all of each other into consideration. And, you know, we would be consulting with each other and we'd have the long conversations that lasted maybe days and days and days, but on purpose, because it needed to. And those conversations created a resolution that was good for everyone. Mm-hmm. And we don't do that anymore. People make on-the-fly decisions for everybody without their knowledge sometimes, right? So those things are happening all the time. And so that's what I'm seeing anyway. So, yeah.
Yeah, thank you for laying that history out for us. And definitely, you know, the fact that, you know, your mom, Jerry, was working, advocating all these years ago, all these generations ago, and some of the supposed solutions that were being put forward by the government, such as the Treaty Commission, that was supposed to bring about results for us, resolution for us, and that hasn't happened. And what you're describing in terms of the fight of the Mumtagila to regain their jurisdiction over their lands and territories is yet another kind of neocolonial layer of removal, and not just removal of people from a land base, but removal of people from each other, which for us, and you guys mentioned that early on, is really the essence of our culture, was that we knew each other and we respected each other and we were related to one another and we acknowledged that, and our actions grew from that understanding. And so we used to put the time in to work through collaborating. But within today's systems, they're very fast, they're very quick, they want a fast decision. And they also put money behind those processes, those fast processes. And so we end up being disabled in a way from being able to have those collective, longer term, engaged processes that actually were the strength of our traditional culture.
I think also we're also, the way that this system is also separating us from the land, our relationship to all of our beings. I mean, I remember as a kid being raised to just understand that, you know, the animals and all of the living things were part of us, and there was a love for our land in that way, the berries and the bears, and they were kin, and we were always aware and conscious of them and how they were doing. And I think that the more that our lands get plundered, the less we're able to access our medicines, the less we're able to actually access the food that, you know, our body needs. And it's like it's all being kind of swept away, you know, the forests in the north end of the island, we know they're just plundering our cedars, our old growths, this watching this, you know, as we're trying to survive. We're dealing with so many things on so many different levels. The health of our people, the mental health of our people. There's just layers and layers of how do we go get through this? And they're all direct results of colonization and the extraction of our resources and the extraction of our medicines, our way of life. They're all interconnected. They can't be separate. And it's we see this also, this disintegration when in our ceremonies, we were just talking about, our potlatches, and the night before the potlatches, all the old people were invited to come together with the family to make sure that everything was done in a good way, because all those old people were relatives too to the family that was hosting the potlatch. So there were memories that they had that maybe somebody else would forget. And this was a very valuable piece of our ceremony. And now we don't, I don't even know the last time any of the people that potlatched ever had a gathering of the old people. And now it's gone from that to only the chiefs are meeting. And so it's like we can mark the progression of colonization. This is successful when we start removing parts of our community and not allowing them to have a voice. And so this is also what we're witnessing in our communities. So I thought I'd just add that to this conversation.
Yeah, I think that the loss of a lot of our culture is also, part of that, the colonization of our people being the removal of our children from their families. We have, like I said before, we have young people who actually have, positions in their own families, and they're growing up in non-Indigenous homes with no culture, no connection to family. It's just another way to keep our society individualistic and keep them away from, and it creates gaps in our memories. It keeps the gaps from being filled. So, and I also think about, those of us in the urban setting, we used to go to all the potlatches, every time there's a potlatch. And so you're there to witness, you're there to, keep it in your memory about what you saw and who was named what and what dances went to whom. And, if there was a marriage, what dowry went over, all of those things. And now the gaps are now also that we're not able to attend all the potlatches because we're making money for, out here, and our ways of being are no longer include being consistent in our own ceremonies. So I might go a year without going to a potlatch, or a couple of years, and so I've missed information. Then you rely on other people to fill in the gaps for you. And that's not always good either, if you're doing it outside of our ceremonies. And proper, even just like when I do go to ceremonies, I don't even recognize what's being done sometimes. And I also realize that some of the information about the rights of that person to their, their own treasure box, I don't know. Sometimes the history isn't there, and it's not being relayed to our people so that we can hold it and pass it forward. Things are just being done, and that never happened before. You had to know the history of a dance. You had to know where it came from and who it belonged to before you. And some of these dances are coming out and they're not even telling the history of those dances. And I've seen it, quite a few times now. It's an interesting piece around, just that, those gaps again, right? And how do we fill those gaps, and how do we begin to I see it as we probably will never go back to the way it was, but how can we construct it close enough to something new that works, that's at least will support our future generations.
Yeah, that's a real concern, is what's happening for our future generations, because, you know, you and I caught some of that, and Jerry would have caught even more than that from our real old people who were teaching us these protocols around collective knowing, witnessing, understanding who we are together, and really, like, to be able to think with one mind as Kwakwaka'wakw people. That's our worldview. That's the way we are in the world. And we're starting to lose that. You see, the younger generations are getting pulled somehow further away from that sense of collectiveness and closer to this individualistic. And, you know, some of that's social media, but other parts of it is kind of the legacy of all these, this colonial oppression that's happened. So I guess one of the things that seems to be identified in the conversation is that need to return to a collective understanding, to rebuild our collective understandings, and how do we do that? Also, the other thing that comes to mind for me, Jerry, when you mentioned the narcissism, it's true. It's almost like as a collective, we are starting to suffer mental illness from all the generations of abuse that we have suffered as a people. And I was reading about trauma, and that trauma comes from disconnection. Right? So our spirits need connection. And our people knew that. And I remember the feeling of being in the big house when I was young, and that sense of connection to everyone in the house. And that's starting to drift away from us. And it's drifting away from us in the political realm as well, where rather than honor the collective structure of our political systems, we're now operating under separate negotiation frameworks. And our relationships no longer seem to be focused on each other and being together. They seem in the political realm at least, they seem to be focused on relationships with the province or the federal government, or even, I would say, philanthropists now is what's happening.
I was asked to speak to a class about reciprocity, the word reciprocity, and what that meant. And how, as Indigenous people, we practice reciprocity. And I said, well, I know that our people never called it a law of the universe, but that is what they were teaching us, the law of the universe. It's like when you breathe in, you breathe out. What you put out there will come back, regardless of the way that it comes back. And I remember these values very, very strongly being put on me by my grandmother. And so, you know, as a child, there were just certain things she said, you don't do. And so it was like, you never make fun of other people. You treat everybody with respect. And so this was ingrained daily. And then they modeled it. And so it was something that, you know, we don't think about. We just live it, right, until we're asked, oh, what does reciprocity mean? And it's built into our big house as well, you know. Why do we have the wolf or the eagle, or why do we have them on our blankets? And, you know, it was George Glendale who said to me, well, a long time ago, you know, we talked to the animals, and we acknowledge those animals that taught us how to live on this earth. We honor them by putting them on our blanket. That's how we, and it's constant. We never, every time we have a ceremony, we're acknowledging who helped us. And this is the piece that never, you know, In our big house, our supernatural beings, when the guests come to witness our work, We give them gifts because they took that time. And this is a foundation of who we are. And that's what's being lost along with the self-centeredness, is that reciprocity, that recognizing it's taking all of these people to keep me moving forward. It's taking all of these people to help me stay alive. And all of the trees and the medicines, this is where we learned this. And this is something that's just slowly slipping away. So, you know, the values, we're losing them and adopting colonial values and not even realizing it.
Yeah, it's hard because in a way what we're talking about is assimilation. You know, and that assimilation is still very present, and our younger generations are really impacted by that. And what's become difficult for us is that it's become more clever. It's like a trickster; it hides itself. And in the past, we were able to, as a collective, identify and know what we were up against. But today, the systems are very sophisticated. And they leverage our own people in order to create division. And yet the foundation of our being is connectedness, like to each other, to the land, to the other beings that exist on the land. We have beautiful dances that express those ideas. Yeah, I wonder, you know, if there's strategies that we can employ then, if we can identify where we're going off. When we're losing that sense of collectivity, then can we identify what the remedies might be?
I go back to the idea that we need to continue to include our old people in the conversation that have, I mean, we have very few left, but we need to hear about our history. We need to hear about the concepts that don't even exist anymore. And they need to be not just recorded, but implemented within our systems again. The larger concepts of reciprocity, of respect, how and it goes beyond respect. It's I see you. You mean something to me, and I'm going to show you how you mean something to me by acknowledging you, by acknowledging you in front of all of our people. By claiming you as my people. Those things we don't, like I those are some of the things, not all of them, but those are some of the ideas and I remember feeling so loved when I was little by you know, a lot of my aunties that have all passed on now, a lot of my relatives that have all passed on now, but just feeling that love and belonging. And I think that's where it begins, is belonging. Because without feeling like you belong, you don't feel safe enough to have hard conversations, to have the deeper conversations. We all need to feel like we belong. Because I can say now, when I walk into the big house, it's, and this is just my honesty, is sometimes I don't feel like I belong in there anymore. Sometimes I feel like I'm invisible in there. And I never felt that as a young person. So I think there's a need to bring back that belonging for our younger generations. Cause I know I can tell you right now, I have two young adults, well, 30 and 21, and they don't feel like they belong in our system, my own children. And part of that is they grew up in the city, right? I bring them back as often as I can, but that's that disconnect. And we move for work, we move for education, we move for all sorts of different reasons. And we move because there's no space anymore. So we're on those postage stamps that they call our reserves, and there's nowhere for our families to grow. You know, they're not giving us any more territory. So where do we go, right? If we continue the mindset, the colonial mindset of staying within the boundaries of those little postage stamps that they've put us on, then we will outgrow those spaces and then we will move, right? So we have all of our young people who are now living in cities and disconnected. And so how do we bring those people back into the fold? How do we bring our people that are, you know, all over the place back to feel wanted and needed and feel sacred again, right? Because we don't. So I think that's part, I mean, that's, it's a, I think it's a big undertaking, but it's doable, right? And I think it starts with our women. It starts with our women having those conversations together, because guess what? We're the life bringers. We are the chief makers. Mm-hmm. So that is our responsibility, mm-hmm. to teach our young men, to teach our young women moving forward what their roles are going to be. You know, yeah, it's just about belonging at the end of the day. And how do we do that? I don't know.
What you're saying really resonates with the metaphor of woven in. You know, the idea that, you know, with the weaving, that there's many parts to it and they all have to fit together in order to become something whole. And it's true, I think, that the systems, the colonial systems in place have been removing us from each other and from our land bases for many generations now. And our healing will be to come back together. And so, you know, from a vantage point of, say, like right now, I'm in the process of moving home and building a home in Kinkam again and kind of having to consider, you know, what does it take to forge that pathway for other people to come home? Because people fundamentally want that. They want people to be there, to be together again, because we feel separated and our spirits suffer from that sense of separation. So how do we make that happen? And I do wonder, even though it might sound difficult in this day and age, that we can see the colonial system starting to collapse around us, and that if we are able to regain jurisdiction over our entire territories, not the reserves that you mentioned earlier, but our entire territories, then we will have room for our people to return home. And we can rebuild our communities and be viable again and live off the land, because the current systems in place in the urban centers cannot provide a good life through the future generations, because we know what's coming and what is actually here today in terms of the economic burden of climate change.
I think finding ways to continue to bring people together to help them make that connection. Like I think about my cousin Mary and I, my mother, her family were very, very disconnected. And none of the children knew their relatives. So we decided to have a community dinner in Alert Bay, in the council hall. And the cousins, they are actually bringing their ashes home to Kinkam. And so we thought, well, this will be a really good time to have this dinner, invite all the relatives so that they can know these are your relatives. And we didn't do a ceremony. We didn't go in the big house. We just went to the council hall. We put up a dinner. We invited all the different branches of our family from my mother's side. And the children were so thrilled. They visibly could see their family. This is who we come from. Those kinds of things, I think. And, you know, some of my cousins said, oh, my kids have been talking about these. They still talk about it to this day. You know, those are kinds of things that don't cost money, but they can bring our remembering together. They have to see their family faces. And, you know, if it isn't in ceremony, in community. So, you know, those are some of the things that can, practical things that have a big impact.
And I like the way you frame that too, like it doesn't have to be in the context of a giant potlatch. It can be smaller than that. Like somehow, I don't know if it's the competitiveness of the outside world, but there's something filtering into our cultural practice that is almost like creating a system where people feel it's about an individual or about themselves, and it has to be very big. You know, whereas in the past our people used to keep things smaller and get a lot of the work done in these laid back situations where, you know, you're eating together, you're spending time together, you're having tea together, you're sitting at the table together talking, and it's not always about ceremony.
Well, and families used to have potlatches, not individuals, mm-hmm. right? It was the family that had a potlatch, and you would see that reflected in how they branded some of the giveaway, some of the presents that they would give, it would have the family name on it, mm-hmm. and the family crest. Mm-hmm. And now it's so-and-so is having a potlatch mm-hmm. instead of, mm-hmm. you know, and so that is, yeah. I mean, it may seem small and unassuming, but it has a huge message, right? Mm-hmm. So yeah, just to me, it's like, it's really interesting that has kind of invaded into our culture and our ways of being. And mm-hmm. and that's another individualistic yeah. representation of what's happening all over, right? I mean, and here, down here, you know, we have lack of space to gather. We have lack of connection. So we don't have a space for culture, for connection, for just gathering to visit. You know, people are working and all of that kind of stuff, but we don't have, you know, and space is expensive, right? Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, you take what you can get, and yeah. we have a friendship center, but that that's taken on a different life too, right? Like it's now more social service based as opposed to connecting and visiting space. I'm sure there are elements there, but like by far and large that it's about social service. So where do our people connect and meet? Where do we have a social hub where we can gather and cook a meal together or hang out or, you know, or just visit, right? So that, you know, I mean, we have soccer tournaments, we have potlatches and large events that happen, but where are the spaces for us for smaller events? I actually had an interview with Michael Glendale, and we were talking, we had all sorts of conversations, but one of them was about urban reserve systems. We should have space in urban settings now. Most of us don't live on reserve. I think the number is like 85% of us live in urban settings now. So why can't we have co-ops off, you know, in communities so that we're all together, you know? It's an interesting concept. And it's funny because at the end of the day, we're always trying to find ways to be together. Right? Where all of our conversations end up, how can we be together? Mm-hmm. Right? And because I think our souls know, mm-hmm. like our beings know that we want to be together and we want to connect. It's just figuring out how to get there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I was thinking back on the woven in and the part that, you know, I was part of, you know, displaying the covers of all the newsletters over the years, in especially in the 60s and 70s, and how many there were. Our people were so busy communicating, putting out these newsletters, sending them all over the Americas, and we wanted people to know what was happening to us. And now, today, you know, the number of ways that people communicate, it's so diminished as well. We always knew what was going on in what we called Indian country, because there were so many of our people communicating and making sure that people knew what was going on. And I also remember how much the hereditary, the chiefs of the time, especially in the late 70s, early 80s, when I moved back to Alert Bay, and how they were part of the people. So when they were fighting with the government about the clear cutting of the forests, they would be right on the front lines with their own people. And I watched the progression of that change when the government invented this self-government term and then placed it upon us and made all of the chiefs go to get this orientation in Ottawa. That's when I started to see the separation between the people and the chiefs. And I was like, this is the definition, these definitions that are put on us. And all of a sudden we start to think that somehow we started this and we didn't, and we don't resist it. We don't even question it. And so I've just watched the way the colonial little markers along the way that we're caught in. And if we're not aware and always noticing, we won't notice until it's too late, and it is getting to that place. So how do we convey that to our own people? Because who's talking to our people? And some of the leaders like Philip Paul and you know, George Manuel, all those old leaders used to just travel from village to village and get donations, and they'd sleep on people's couches because it was important for them to let the people know what the heck is going on. And that was the only way in our communities that our people knew what was happening. You know, so those things they're a thing of the past now.
And that's, I think, how it's been set up. You know, we can't even get a conversation with government as Mumtagila people. We don't, it's like a wall, you know, and it's sort of like, oh, well, we do things this way. And they're siloed, right? So one person doesn't know what another person is doing, and so they're giving you instructions on how you need to conduct yourself with them. You need to write this letter, and you need to communicate with this person, and it's confusing, and it's intentionally confusing, so that our people give up. You know, we sat with province and federal treaty people, and they're telling us our hands are tied. You need to go to, you know, this person. And then they tell you that you need to go to this person. And, you know, we're just going around in circles trying to find out who's in charge here. Mm-hmm. We don't know. And we have a whole government dedicated to serving, you know, like our people. But do we know those people? Do we know who's supposedly serving our people? And what decisions are being made on our behalf? We are still being stewarded and custodian by a government we don't even know. And this is 2023, and we're still being caretaken by a government because supposedly we don't know what's best for our own people. And then they give us bits and pieces. And then that's reconciliation or whatever that. I don't even like that term because it implies that we had a good relationship at one point. We never did, you know, so there's all these layers. And so no wonder why we're already up against so much. And then to have it invade even into our own ways of being, like it's overwhelming, you know. I mean, there are days where I'm just like, you know, my eyes glaze over and I just like want to check out. But you can't because you have children, and eventually your children are going to have children. So you have to think ahead, right? And you have to think about the future and what that means to all of our people, because that's what togetherness is. That's what belonging is you're thinking about each other, right? And so hopefully we can do that in the future. Start now, you know?
I feel like women are a really huge part of this moving forward, and I think that we've been selectively removed from the decision-making processes. And so part of the healing that we need to see in order to kind of reconnect the future generations is to actually, we need the voices of women to be upheld and heard. And we need to return back to the former jurisdiction and voice that we used to have, because through arranged marriage and through our traditional systems, our women were very, very highly upheld. And in many ways, like, our entire society was based and built on this acknowledgement of what came through the women on her side when couples were coming together and children were being born. So we have the knowledge to go back and recreate the understanding of who we are, but we also need to address the role of women and how do we adapt that role today in a modern hereditary system. Because if we're no longer able to be vocal and present in the decision-making processes through the arranged marriage system, then we need to perhaps create a different system where we have specifically recognized space for women to participate in our decision-making. And I think what I've seen happening is that through funding, government and industry have selectively chosen who they want to work with. And women in particular don't happen to be their people of choice, because we tend to want those longer processes and we want more of an integrated approach. So even in the current systems, if you look at what they choose to fund, there's a process of selective removal that is continuing today from the very first statements they ever made when they showed up on the coast and said, those women have too much power. We need to shut that down.
Well, it's shopping, right? They shop for what they want to see, right? So it's, if I can't get collaboration from you, I'll get it from you. And they do that. And then they say, oh, well, this is the person who's in charge now. So, you know, and that's been going on forever. And, you know, that's how our people got, the Mumtigila people got removed from having any decisions, was just that. Oh, this person is a yes person. They will endorse all of our extracting practices. So we're going to go with them. And that's exactly how it happened. I totally see like that happening, and it's still happening.
It's an amazing conversation, because it starts to pull back these layers of propaganda today that we live with, mm-hmm. You know, that reconciliation is happening, that there's all these processes in place now that are going to resolve the Indian question.
Oh, yeah. New treaty is a catchphrase that's happening now, where they're you know, revisiting bits and pieces of land that they might hand over. You know, it's like they're giving us a little gift. Here's a little gift of 2 hectares, you know, a postage stamp next to your postage stamp, because now we recognize that you went from 400 people to 475 people, and you might need 2 more houses. That's exactly what it is, right? And so it creates this, and then you have nation to nation fighting, and you know that's even, you know, fighting over GPS coordinates, like, you're 2 miles into my territory, and we didn't have that. We never. So this is also a construct that didn't exist. So now we're fighting amongst each other over 2 miles into each other's territory, supposed territories, when we had a system that was totally separate from what the colonial system is, right? You know, we had this understanding that, you know, yes, that territory belongs to, you know, that those people, but in that territory is a specific type of food that we all need for sustenance. So there's a respect that is there to harvest and to even stay in each other's territories to do those things. And now it's just like, oh no, that's in our territory. You know, like the, you know, when it comes to treaty, they want us to conform to their way of defining what boundaries are.
Yes.
And so that creates that us and them and the separation. And that's why, I mean, that's part of the reason why we're not collectively fighting together for all of our territories. Mm-hmm. Because how many nations are we? If they can get us to fight each other, then we've done the work for them. They don't have to fight us. And then they can slowly conquer and divide one at a time. And, you know, so that, and that's what we're seeing right now. So,
yeah,
you know, and the people that are in power in our own communities are elected systems that also don't technically serve our people to their fullest, right? Because you have elected people who are now negotiating for all of our territories at the treaty table without their own people to be there and to help with that process.
Well, we've also been forced into adapting or accepting, I guess you'd say, the way that the colonizer, his definition of women, the colonizer's definition of women. And so our communities have also been forced to, oh no, you don't do any of that important stuff with women, because they don't do that important stuff with their own women. They're, you know, right down to even Franz Boas, who was, you know, in our territories, but who he chose to work with was a male, and yet all the knowledge was carried by the women. And so it started a long time ago, you know, that the Christian teachings and what the man is the head of the household, you know, these were all like the ideas about women. And, you know, when I did some research, and the term Mr. means master, and the term Mrs. means to be owned by master. And so that coming from Europe to this land, and women and children were owned when they got here. So here we have this system that will try to squash the system that we were part of and continues to this day. I don't think that agenda has, you know, really changed too much. They insist on doing all their work with other men. And so it has created another level of separation in our communities. Yeah, it's there's so many layers to this.
I like to think of some of the levels of resistance just at the tea table. Mm-hmm. You know, the conversations women have, and we need to start to assert that at the on the political playing field, because it is our rightful place, and we have something to say. And because we are highly concerned about our children still, and it makes us just slightly less susceptible to that individualized, narcissistic disease.
So the communication is really important, the coming together, the talking to each other. It's really, and to talk about these and make spaces for us to have those conversations, to speak freely, ongoing, continually helping each other with new things that we've learned, so that we can keep finding ways to beat this, you know.
Yeah. Well, that sounds like something that would be amazing to foster. And it seems like it would help us with our spirits and our souls too, because it's been very hard, very difficult. And sometimes when you can identify what's going wrong, then you can identify how to fix it. So I've really enjoyed the conversation we've had. I'd like to extend those conversations, broaden this conversation amongst other women. And I think it will help us to help with the coming together and the healing of our communities and the assertion of who we are.
Hey,
Hey.